I am glad you're joining me for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word, and I invite you to join me over in Joshua chapter number 22. Now, I believe that this event is part of a host of events that took place in the seventh month of the seventh year that Israel was in the Promised Land, and that they had been gathered together to Shiloh in the seventh month to set up the Ark of the Covenant and the tabernacle there as its new home in the geographical center of the Promised Land itself, where all the Israelis were currently living. Now, the annexed territories, those are across the way, and we're going to actually talk about the tribes that are in annexed territories in a moment. But in this time period of the seventh month, I believe that is when Joshua allots to the remaining tribes their territory and effectively tells them, now it's yours to take. You need to get out there and occupy it. And then he pretty much tells everybody, you can go home. You can go back to your brand new territory now and rest for your first sabbatical year. And then after that, begin living your lives in the Promised Land. Now that means that the war, the conquest period, if you will, has come to an end. There's a little bit of something there at the end of chapter 22 that kind of gives that idea. Verse 43 says, thus he who is gave to Israel all the land that he swore to give to their fathers. They took possession of it, and they settled there. He who is gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their fathers. Not one of all their enemies had withstood them, for he who is had given all their enemies into their hands. Not one word of all the good promises that he who is had made to the house of Israel had failed. All came to pass. So the conquest phase under Joshua was very successful. Now comes the occupation by the individual tribes, and that doesn't go so well. That'll be the story in the book of Judges. But first, Joshua dismisses the tribes from the east side of the Jordan, from the annexed territory, who had been put under oath to be in the vanguard for this conquest phase. They were going to be the point of the spear we've been talking about. And so now they have been able to declare mission accomplished, and they can go home. And so Joshua does that at this time. Chapter 22 of Joshua. At that time, Joshua summoned the Reubenites and the Gadites and half of the tribe of Manasseh, and said to them, you have kept all that Moses, the servant of he who has commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I have commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days, down to this day, but have been careful to keep the charge of he who is your God. And now he who is your God has given rest to your brothers as he has promised them. Now that was the condition of their giving, being given the land in the annexed territory to the east of the Jordan. They had to come and fight, serve at the head of the combined Israeli army until Joshua had defeated all of the enemies inside the perimeters of the Promised Land. So all that is done now. Therefore, Joshua says, turn, go to your tents in the land where your possession lies, which Moses, the servant of he who is, gave you on the other side of the Jordan. Only be very careful to observe the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of He Who Is, commanded you, to love He Who Is your God, and to walk in all His ways, and to keep His commandments, and to cling to Him, and to serve Him with all your heart and with all your soul. Now that sounds very much like Deuteronomy chapter 6, doesn't it? So Joshua blessed them, sent them away, and they went to their tents. Now, to the one half of the tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession in Bashan. Now, Bashan is from a line basically parallel to the bottom, the southern end of the Sea of Galilee, and off to the east of there, all the way up to Mount Hermon, the foothill portion of Mount Hermon. All of that is Bashan. We call it the Golan today. But to the other half, Joshua had given a possession beside their brothers in the land west of the Jordan. So the other half of Manasseh is on the west side of the Jordan in the Promised Land proper. So Joshua, when he sent them away to their homes and blessed them, he said to them, go back to your tents with much wealth. So there's a lot of booty they've picked up. And with very much livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, iron, much clothing. Clothing was always considered a wealth item. It was often passed down through multiple generations because they were so carefully and well made. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brothers. So the vanguard army of Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben were only part of the military of those three tribes. Some of their people stayed in the annexed area and started raising crops and taking care of animals and taking care of the families there. And so Joshua tells them, you need to share the booty, share the spoils with those that have been at home during this time. So the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned home, parting from the people of Israel at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. So Shiloh is south of Shechem and north of Bethel. And it's on the main road between those two towns. And it has now become the new worship site. So they left there to go to the land of Gilead, their own land, of which they had possessed themselves by command of He Who Is through Moses. So if you leave Shiloh and you find a little highway, a little roadway that goes eastward down into the Jordan Valley, once you get to the Jordan and cross, you're going to be in Gilead, which is pretty much the northern portion of the southern Jordan Valley. And Gilead is going to be the place where these guys set up a monument before they split to their different areas. Verse 10, when they had come to the region of the Jordan that is in the land of Canaan, the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by the Jordan, an altar of imposing size. So before they cross over into Gilead and split up, they drag together a whole bunch of massive stones and make a gigantic altar. Now, they're not making it to sacrifice on. That becomes very clear in the story later. But it takes on the shape of a sacrificial altar. It's got uncut stones pulled together so that it has a relatively flat top to it. Well, verse 11 says, the people of Israel, and what we mean by that is the people on the west side of the Jordan, in Israel proper, when they heard of it, they said, "Behold, the people of Reuben, the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built the altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region about the Jordan on the side that belongs to the people of Israel." And when the people of Israel heard it, the whole assembly of the people of Israel gathered at Shiloh to make war against them. Now, what's going on here? Well, the law given from God through Moses and repeated by Moses in his Deuteronomy speech makes it very clear that sacrifices are only supposed to be taking place at the designated worship site, which is now Shiloh. They have assumed that what happened was that these three tribes set up a rival worship site down in the Jordan Valley, a couple of tens of miles from Shiloh, at the crossing point going over into Gilead. Now, they've probably also assumed that they made sacrifices on it. So by doing that, they have violated the covenant. And the covenant says if other tribes violate the covenant and worship other gods and goddesses, then you need to go and execute God's justice on them. And so that's what they're thinking they need to do. So they gather back to Shiloh again. I think it's just only a matter of weeks since Joshua sent them all home. They're going to send an exploratory committee to find out what's going on. Maybe they should have sent an exploratory committee to find out what was going on before they started gathering for war. Verse 13, "Then the people of Israel sent to the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh in the land of Gilead, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest." So Phinehas is going to be the future high priest. But right now, he functions as an ambassador, if you will, or maybe an enforcement officer for worship. So he goes, and with him, 10 chiefs, one from each of the tribal families of Israel, because they want leadership on this embassage to the other side. So they came to the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh in the land of Gilead, and they said to them, "Thus says the whole congregation of He Who Is, what is this breach of faith that you've committed against the God of Israel in turning away this day from following He Who Is by building yourselves an altar this day in rebellion against He Who Is?" So they've jumped to an assumption here. Always a bad choice. You should always check before you make accusations. And that's what these guys have failed to do. They've failed to check. And so we need to learn from history's mistakes. And this is one of them. And thankfully, double checking kept it from getting too far out of hand. They jump into a little history lesson here. Have we not had enough of the sin of Peor, from which even yet we've not cleansed ourselves, and for which there came a plague upon the congregation of He Who Is, that you too must turn away this day from following He Who Is? Now that's an interesting connection, especially since Phinehas is the one leading this delegation. The sin of Peor is only about 8 years ago on this chronology. And it involved a whole bunch of Israelis going and partying with pagans and even trying to bring that party back into the camp of Israel. And when Phinehas saw that that was happening, that one particular Israeli was bringing the party home, he went and executed the guy and the woman on the spot. So he's a big-time enforcer of doing things the right way. And so he's like, have you forgotten the lesson of Peor already? We're still paying the price for that. Are you going to do it again where you're worshiping other gods and goddesses at a site other than God's holy site? If you too rebel against he who is today, then tomorrow, he'll be angry with the whole congregation of Israel. There was a lot of fallout from the sin of Peor, and it impacted on a lot of families. A lot of families lost family members, and it hurt. But Phinehas, who's probably doing the speaking here, is not just thinking about the Peor thing. He's thinking about something that happened whenever they entered the land, only 7 years ago. He says, did not Acher, the son of Zerah, break faith in the matter of the devoted things, and wrath fell on all the congregation of Israel? He didn't perish alone for his iniquity. So he said, we also had the issue of Acher making a bad choice, and other people died because of him. Are you going to do the same thing to us again? Verse 21, enough with the assumptions, now we get the facts. Then the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh said in answer to the heads of the families of Israel, the mighty God, and this is Shaddai, I believe, here. Well, I guess Shaddai does not appear in the context. It's just El. The mighty God, El, he who is the mighty one, God, he who is, he knows. Let Israel itself know. So they're basically calling on God to be a witness to them and their innocence. If it was in rebellion or in breach of faith against he who is, don't spare us today for building an altar to turn away from following he who is. Or if we did so to offer burnt offerings or grain offerings or peace offerings on it, may he who is himself take vengeance. So yeah, if we're worshiping other gods and goddesses on this altar, then yeah, we would deserve to be executed from the nation. If we were violating the rules that we're only supposed to be doing sacrifices at the tabernacle at Shiloh, yeah, we deserve to get penalized for that too. Verse 24, no, we did it from fear that in time to come, your children might say to our children, what do you have to do with he who is the God of Israel? He who has made a Jordan a boundary between us and you, you people of Reuben, people of Gad. Manasseh kind of gets out of the mention here because there's already half of the tribe of Manasseh in the promised land. You have no portion in he who is. So they are anticipating that because of the natural boundary of the Jordan River, and remember, the Jordan back in this time in history flooded widely every single late winter, early spring. So it was definitely a major geophysical boundary. And so they're anticipating that one of these years, way off in the future, they might try to come into the promised land proper and get turned away, being told, you guys aren't Israelis. You don't live inside the promised land. Why are you trying to come over here and participate at Shiloh? You're not authorized. And so that is why they decided to make this marker. Your children might end up making our children cease to worship he who is. So these guys are worried that by being barred at the border of the Jordan, the east side Israelis might actually say, okay, enough of that nonsense. I guess we'll do our own worship. And so he says, spokesperson here says, that's not a good thing. So this is what we did. Verse 24, 6. Therefore, we said, let us now build an altar, not for burnt offering, nor for sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you, between our generations after us, that we do perform the service of he who is in his presence with our burnt offerings and sacrifices and peace offerings, so your children will not say to our children in time to come, you have no portion in he who is. We thought if this should be said to us or to our descendants in time to come, we should say, well, behold, a copy of the altar of he who is, which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings, not for sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you. So that's the whole point of this marker, which is on the west shore, just probably outside of the flood zone, by a crossing point, not very far from Shiloh, the worship site, going over into Gilead, so that this would be kind of like a big reminder, go this direction to get to Shiloh for true worship. And then the Western Israelis would acknowledge, yes, when they come past that, that's a reminder that they belong over here. That's the whole point. Then he finishes saying, far be it from us that we should rebel against he who is and turn away this day from following he who is by building an altar for burnt offering, grain offering, or sacrifice other than the altar of he who is our God that stands before his tabernacle. Now, it is interesting to me, not really highlighted a lot, but once the tabernacle was set up permanently at Shiloh, it seems as if the burnt offering bronze altar was either placed up on top of a stone altar or it was stored away in preference for the use of this natural stone altar. The bronze altar will be mentioned again later, but this passage says that this stone altar was supposed to be modeled on the stone altar that these guys had seen set up at Shiloh. Verse 30. When Phinehas the priest and the chiefs of the congregation, the heads of the families of Israel who were with him, heard the words that the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the people of Manasseh spoke, it was good in their eyes. So they heard the testimony and realized they had jumped to a conclusion and that it was nothing but good intention in the hearts of their fellow Israelis. So Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, said to the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the people of Manasseh, today we know that he who is in our midst, because you have not committed this breach of faith against he who is. Now you delivered the people of Israel from the hand of he who is. So basically, you're not going to get us in trouble because you didn't do anything wrong. Then Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest and the chiefs, returned from the people of Reuben and the people of Gad in the land of Gilead to the land of Canaan, to the people of Israel, and brought back word to them. And the report was good in the eyes of the people of Israel. The people of Israel blessed God. It's a way of talking about how they gave praise to God, thanked God for the fact that they didn't end up having to deal harshly with their fellow Israelis. And they spoke no more of making war against them to destroy the land where the people of Reuben and the people of Gad were settled. And the people of Reuben and the people of Gad called the altar witness. Now, the word that appeared earlier is Ed. It actually sounds like Ed, unless you do the big gulp at the front, and then it's kind of Ged. But that's the name of the altar. It's Ed. And the reason they did it was because that was their testimony. This is only here as a witness between us that he who is our God. So that marker stays on the border between the east and west of Israel for an indeterminate period of time. Chapter 23, we'll just barely introduce this, starts with the phrase, a long time afterward. Now, how long? We don't know. Probably close to the time of Joshua's death. Jewish tradition says that he was the leader of Israel inside the Promised Land for 25 years, and that he died at age 110. We know that the first sabbatical year started in 1410 BC in the fall, finished up in 1409 BC in the fall, and then they began their next seven-year cycle, and then another seven-year cycle after that. And so Joshua, if the tradition is correct, would have lived through three sabbatical cycles. And so I suspect, and this is what I will remind you of when we come back to this next episode, I suspect that what we read in chapter 23 may have occurred at the third sabbatical cycle of the Jewish people, when Joshua realizes, I'm not going to make it to another one of these great big national meetings where we read the law. And so I want to talk to the people.